set this right here.
Okay.
And I'll just say this is Andre Gervais interviewing Barbara Bell, Miss Barbara Bell, St. Mary's University Secretary of the Senate. The date is March 8th, 2013. Already. Surprising. And could you please give me your full name?
Barbara Louise Bell.
Excellent. And what is your date and place of birth?
I was born on June 1st, 1949 in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Really? Wow. That is amazing. My girlfriend is from Winnipeg.
That's wonderful.
It's not in the line of questioning, but we met in Quebec, in Chicoutimi, and I had a couple of chances to visit, and I love Winnipeg. It's a beautiful, beautiful city
in
the middle of
nowhere. It is interesting. It is interesting, and it's changed radically over the last 30, 40 years. It's amazing the changes that have been wrought in that wonderful little flat prairie town.
Oh, now I just want to talk to you about Winnipeg. I'm going to talk about St. Mary's. All right. And that's interesting, too. It's a good subject.
Absolutely. I used to work on the corner of Portage and Main, the windiest corner in the world. You pretty much had to hold on to the bus stop in order not to be blown away.
Yeah.
Now they've put corridors underneath the road so people can go almost the full length of the main business area there underneath the pavement, which is wonderful because in the wintertime, you don't have to brave that horrendous wind.
I was there in the summer and I said, I'd love to visit in the winter. I was like, no, you don't. You wouldn't hack it, Maritime boy there, you know?
Right.
Could you tell me a little bit about your background, including maybe that and where you
Absolutely.
Grew up?
Absolutely. So, well, I did spend all my early years in Winnipeg. I grew up there, went to the primary, through the primary school education. I attended the Red River College there, University of Winnipeg, University of Manitoba. My original focus was in arts. But I had a widowed mother who was widowed very early, so I had to work for my tuition. She couldn't help me at all. And so I had to work through the breaks, and at times I had to take a semester off to build up the money. So, you know, I didn't move around in Winnipeg during that time. We lived in a three-block radius all my younger years. And I sang quite a bit of my younger life as well. I was a member of the Winnipeg Philharmonic Choir. I sang in a number of church choirs, my high school choir. I went to Llangollen in Wales and participated in the International Music Festival. And that was quite an experience. And I was lucky enough through my university years to get on with Rainbow Stage in Winnipeg, which it was an outdoor stage at the time. Now they have this beautiful retracting ceiling on it that will cover it over during bad weather, but it wasn't like that when I was there. It's almost an equivalent to our Neptune Theater here. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the way I made my way through university, was singing for a living. I also worked for a manufacturing distributing firm during that time, and a brokerage firm. And that's where I worked on the corner of Portage and Main, because I worked for James Richardson Securities. And they were a national brokerage firm. And from the top the floor of that building where my office was, I could see all the way to Gimli, Manitoba. That's how flat the prairies are there. That was 60 miles away. So that it was a great, great learning experience. But at that point, I got bit by the commerce bug. Business, I was just so taken with it. I was originally going to teach, and that's why I was in arts. But my focus changed then, and I went into commerce. And after that, I continued to pursue secondary education through correspondence, because for a while I was working in an sort of semi-isolated area in Ontario. So I was working through correspondence. I attended Georgian College in Ontario. And when I moved out here, I was also a student at the Mount here at St. Mary's and at Dell and through their Henson College as well.
Oh, wow.
So
the trifecta.
I've been,
awesome.
I'm a I'm really a lifelong learner. I'm very committed to that. And I enjoy learning. I enjoy the challenge. And just as an evidence of that, right now I'm enrolled here at St. Mary's in my second semester of Mandarin. So there's a new challenge.
Yeah. Oh,
absolutely.
That's
we have a very large sector of our international students here speak Mandarin as their first language, and it seemed like an appropriate challenge since I was working here and there were a lot of students that were speaking
that's fantastic.
That
And I mean, you know, as you progress and speak to them, you know, I know that they would appreciate it so much, you know, with language. If you don't know a language, or if you're in an area where everybody is speaking a different language,
mm-hmm.
you lose your wit, you lose your intelligence, you lose your sense of humor because you can't communicate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when I was in Quebec, you know, I didn't know French, and so I felt like I didn't know anything
mm-hmm.
because I couldn't express myself
mm-hmm.
properly.
Yeah.
And so if you can, I mean, that's just only going to make them feel more welcome.
Well,
I think that's great.
I'm certainly hoping it will, and I'm hoping that I'm going to get better quicker.
yeah no, I'm sure like
it
you said,
it is a challenging language. They say that English is hard. I'd say that Mandarin is very hard.
Are you writing in it as well as
absolutely
oh,
we're
wow.
learning to write the characters as well as to speak we're really enjoying it.
And the courses here, I mean, how do you find the courses, the language courses?
These courses are offered through the Confucius Center, and I can't say any more about the teachers. They are absolutely amazing. They really are. They have the lessons down to a fine science, and they know how to draw the people into the conversation and into the learning, and it's really active learning.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're doing dialogue in the class, and they're even teaching us songs, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So that's it is a wonderful, wonderful course. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So maybe could you tell me a little bit about your position here at St. Mary's?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Secretary of the Office of Senate here, and it's quite a diverse position because you touch almost everywhere on the campus, with possible exception of facilities and custodial. I speak to them, but you know, I deal with students a great deal of the time, mostly in regards to academic appeals, if they're having some issues there, any kind of academic discipline or student discipline that is covered under Senate. I deal with curriculum changes. We handle the calendar. I do all the editing and development for the academic calendar for the next academic year. That task was just completed a month ago, and we should actually have the printed copy back any day now.
Great.
So I'm also in a support function for academic planning. That's strategic planning within the university. I deal with MPHEC in regards to the submission of new program proposals. So if we come up with a new doctorate or a new master's or a minor or some certificate or diploma program, it goes through this office, and I make sure that that gets to Senate for approvals. There's also many, many standing committees that I'm in oversight over. The student success and sustainability. There's a number of others that, as I'm trying to point out, lots of diversity here.
Yeah.
It was one of the things that drew me to the position. I've been here now for going on 9 years, and when I originally saw the ad in the paper, I thought, what an interesting challenge it would be to see the inside of how a university functions and operates. And the scope that was demonstrated in the job posting
mm-hmm.
seemed really, really diverse. Sounded like it would be a great challenge for a person that had multitasking
mm-hmm.
skills, and certainly that was myself. So that's why I joined, and boy, I'm going to tell you, 9 years has flown. Now, while there's cyclical stuff that happens at predictable times throughout the year here in Senate, there isn't two days that are the same, because even the cyclical nature of that work, things that are unique and really quite specific to come out of all of that, so that there really isn't any two days here that are exactly the same. It's an amazing position.
Would you say that the university is like a living, breathing organism?
Absolutely.
I mean, for example, you feed your pet every day, but maybe they don't want the same food every day, so it can change like that.
It can
So it's
change.
like, and it makes me excited to hear that everyone is adapting and that you've got to adapt to the changing needs, I
You
guess.
do. You do. You know, it's an amazing thing. When I arrived here, St. Mary's seemed to me to be pretty much as it had been when I had taken a program 10 years previously. And ever since I've arrived, things have been in a state of continuous change. The footprint of the campus has changed incredibly since I arrived. The first thing they did, well, after I arrived, was expand the science building. And the next thing that happened was there was that whole concourse, the atrium and the Global Learning Commons that was built through there to join up with the Burke building. And that definitely was a huge positive impact on just the environment for both staff, faculty, and especially for the students. I don't think I go through there at any time of the day or evening that it isn't quite busy down there. So that was a really, really an amazing change. The changes that have gone on in the Homburg Center, I almost don't recognize it from when I went there, when I first arrived on campus and was taking the programs there. And there's more to come over there. It's wonderful, the renovations that they did to the residences as well. So from and McNally Building, mustn't forget McNally Building. That's quite a facelift that went on there. So from that perspective, there's been huge changes. And from a curriculum perspective, my goodness, we've had oh my gosh, I'll bet you. Oh, in 9 years, we've probably had maybe 20 new programs, either doctorates or majors or bachelors or revisions, things like adding cooperative programs to, for example, the Bachelor of Arts. There's now cooperative programs in so many more disciplines than there was originally when I arrived. We've got a doctor of industrial and organizational psychology, a doctorate that was one of the first ones that went through when I came. There's what we've got graduate diplomas in cooperative management. Oh gosh, there's a whole list of them. I'm just trying to think of some of them. A Bachelor of Arts major in entrepreneurship, which I think is a wonderful thing, was something that was really needed, and arts can lead to entrepreneurial pursuits just as much as commerce can, and so that was an incredible addition. We've got what Latin, a minor in Latin American studies, and they're quite diverse. They're all over the map, and so those were huge. Those were really, really big changes here. Let's see. There have been really, really wide changes in regards to the transparency and reporting for the government. There are new standards that have been brought down for assessing institutions and reviewing existing programs.
Is this the provincial or federal government?
This is provincial government.
Okay.
These programs are approved through an agency called the MPHEC, Maritime Higher Education Committee, and they are there's new standards that have come down that are requiring a regular cycle of reviews, which is pretty compressed. So for larger institutions that have lots of programs, this is a significant change for them. It's a significant investment in time and resources as well. And it is going to be an ongoing challenge into the future. Not only that, but there is now globally a movement in the post-secondary area to link all the courses and all the topics within courses to learning outcomes. So for example, if you learn this, where is that expected to apply in a career someplace or a career path? And again, that's a challenge that is moving out into the future for post-secondary institutions. We are working on it here. We're about 7 years into that process of developing new processes and new policies as we go along to try and address the different areas to bring them into line with what the new standards are. Just within the last 2 months, we approved a new Senate policy on a simple thing like course outlines, so that those course outlines would now require that there be learning outcomes attached to the topics that are taught within a course. This isn't something that's new. It actually has been in other areas in the world. Europe is quite far along in the road in that. The U.S. is also proceeding down that path. They're a little bit ahead of Canada, but we're moving in that direction as well. So, and the other thing, we've changed the course evaluation process here. I know you wanted to talk about that. Yeah. We, in 2007, adopted the SEEQ tool that is accepted worldwide in classrooms for determining and evaluating the quality of teaching. And that has been working really well as far as a tool. The reporting was all revised, and so the reporting is more valuable to faculty. We're still looking at ways of improving that. But as with anything else, of course, when you know, it depends on the resources that we can apply to it, so that definitely, as the resources become available, we're still working along those lines. But we do have a percentage of our evaluation system online, and that could be functioning better. I would like to see more student participation in that, and it's simply, as we discussed earlier, there is no incentive at this time for the student to fill out the evaluation form. So as a result, the online results that we get are not as high as the results that we get in the classroom. We get about 65 to 68% of the student population participating. And when I first arrived, we had pretty much the same percentage of faculty in participating in the program. Now, that's anywhere between 92 and 95% of faculty that participate in the evaluation process. So that's a really significant move. And so we're very pleased about that. We'd like to be able to address the student participation a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
It's important information. It's used so many places in the university, and it's one tool that feeds back how the students are perceiving the classes, and without that, the prof doesn't really have a good grasp on how to change texts, for example, or course materials to make the course more actively appropriate to the students and their learning methods. So we're working on it.
Well, I know I appreciate hearing that. I'm sure anybody that listens will, because like you say, if we're studying or taking coursework, it's hard to find the time or to think, does anybody really care if I want to comment on this or what I think the changes would be. And so, you mentioned that it goes into so much, so many different things, the information that you get from the course feedback. How, I guess, how does the Senate maybe work to act in the best interests of the students, or what are some of the challenges with that? Is it lack of information, or do you find they have enough information? Do they take it into account?
Where students and Senate come into play, we are usually dealing with issues that they are dealing with in the community or the environment here. So that, for example, to give you a simple example, during the H1N1 virus problem, there was the general medical population was telling these students not to come down to the clinics just if they were not really almost a death's door, but that's not quite what was said. But anyway, they were saying stay home, hydrate, keep isolated, don't bring the disease to anybody else. Well, what the problem that had was that how would they get a medical excuse if they had an assignment due, if they had an exam? And that's the purview of Senate. We're responsible for academic matters such as that. So what we did to address that problem was that we rescinded a piece of one of the academic regulations. I believe it's Academic Regulation 8 that stipulates that medical excuse is a requirement. So for a terminal period of time, we suspended that particular requirement, so that we could address that need. It wasn't the students' fault that they couldn't do it, so that's just a very simple example. A little more complex example would be a transfer-in student. From the time I started here to about, oh, I don't know, 2 years ago, I guess, our transfer-in students became about 25% of our student population. Student population has got really mobile. They're moving around quite a bit. And so what that does is if you've got a transcript that's transferring in from another institution that may not have the same kind of grade values and ratings that you do, so that what in those cases, as our population increased, it became more evident that we needed to address that. So that we took a look at the grading systems from the places where our students were coming from across Canada, in the States, internationally, and we came up with what we thought was a revision to our set of ratings that would then make translations a little easier. Another thing we did at that time was that there was a requirement, I believe, when I arrived here for 75% of the courses to be from St. Mary's. And what would happen in that case would be we would have a really good student transferring in with stellar academic standing, and when it came time to graduate, they wouldn't be eligible for distinctions, and that they had the academic performance, but they if they had been anywhere else, or if they'd stayed at home or wherever they came from, they would have been recognized with a distinction. And when we looked at that, we thought that that really wasn't fair to the student, that we really needed to take another look at that. And so we did. We revised that academic regulation so that students coming in with transfer in credits could be eligible for distinctions and indeed scholarships, depending on where they were in the process.
And what year was that,
That was
approximately?
2 years ago.
2 years
Two
ago.
years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
Well, that's a great example of acting on behalf of the students,
absolutely,
and that's so
absolutely.
encouraging to hear,
Well, this office. We see a lot of the input from things like course evaluations. We hear a lot of the input from the students themselves. They're participating in all our Senate committees. We have them at every level, and so their feedback is coming into things like regulations and curriculum. And if there's something that is brought forward that has merit and needs to be assessed, then we definitely will be acting upon it. So and like I said, those are just some of the examples of some of the things that we have done.
If I can, I'd like to ask you about you mentioned that it was 10 years before you started working here that you had taken a course here.
Yes.
Okay, so was that when you first arrived in Halifax or at St. Mary's? Like, when would you have first
No,
come to the
no.
school?
That was 2000, 2001
Okay.
that I was in that course. I came here from Nova Scotia, from Ontario, 32 years ago.
Okay.
Okay, the reason I moved out here was because my husband and I had our own manufacturing operation, and we were in the ocean sector. We manufactured safety and rescue equipment for the offshore, and we were here for about 10 years or so, and I began to wonder just how current I was staying with the general business learning that was
Okay.
going on in the institutions. And there was a management development course offered here at St. Mary's that I thought would allow me to reassess where I stood in relation to other people that were probably younger than I was, but also the current teaching philosophies and the current course materials. So that I really wanted to get a handle on that, and I didn't think it would hurt to upgrade a little bit either if that was what was going to happen. And being a lifelong learner, as I've already said, I was just interested in just refreshing all of that knowledge that I'd gained as I'd come up through the education system.
And what year was it that you started taking the course, approximately?
2000,
It was
2001
2000,
was that
2001.
year.
Okay. And then so you started working here
In 2004.
in 2004. Okay. Okay. And I mean, like you say, you talked about just regards to the campus, the changes that have taken place there.
Huge
How
change.
did you find the transition from taking courses to now, like you said, getting the inside scoop, having a look at the inner workings of the university and being a part of that?
I certainly have a greater appreciation for what goes on behind the scenes. There's no doubt about it. In regards to the St. Mary's community, just from the feeling of it, it looks much better now, and of course the facilities have been vastly improved. But the feel of the small campus, the one-on-one, the individual attention, it's all still there. It's a wonderful environment for a student. Having been to the universities of Manitoba and the Dalhousies of the world, where you could be in huge classes. And as a matter of fact, when I was in the University of Manitoba, and that's a long time ago, I'm going to tell you, there were classes where I wasn't even in the same classroom as the prof. I was watching him on a TV because the class was just too large. We couldn't fit into any classroom. Now, that was a long time ago. I'm sure they have much bigger classrooms. But if the classes were that big then, think about what they are now. And how on earth do you get one-on-one attention or with an instructor in situations like that? It's very, very difficult. And here it's a natural happenstance. It's just something that is so wonderful because you can struggle along, and just simply because you know the numbers ahead of you, you may not go for that help. But here, there's a possibility that you can get in and see the prof, so that's that from my perspective, that's the wonderful thing about the smaller university environment.
And did you notice that right away when you first arrived?
Absolutely.
Like, what were some of your impressions, about the campus or about the faculty or?
Initially, when back in 2000 when I first arrived, I found the faculty very accommodating, very friendly, extremely helpful, and that really hasn't changed at all. The faculty here seems to me to be a little more international than it was back then. But back then, I didn't have the long-term relationship with St. Mary's that I do now. So perhaps it was just that I wasn't seeing as many of the instructors as I do now. But it seems to me now that there are more international flavor to the faculty,
bringing different perspectives from
absolutely
all over the world.
Different perspectives, different cultural ways, different approaches. That's what makes St. Mary's so wonderful, because we've got such a large international student population, and what a marvelous diversity there is here, and all these different languages being spoken, and different ways of doing things, and it enriches our environment. At least I believe it does. I find it really interesting to deal with the students here. So it's a marvelous thing.
How would you describe your time at St. Mary's since you began working here? You mentioned that it changes day to day, but mm-hmm. there are some cyclical things, mm-hmm. but there's always a need to adjust. What are some of the sort of, maybe not projects that are the same, but issues that come up? Is it like tuition changes, or you mentioned the academic calendar that must need adjustments every year? And
absolutely, that's quite a process here at St. Mary's. Well, I imagine in every university that process is quite significant, but it really goes through a very stringent due diligence process right from the time that it's conceived by the faculty member to the department curriculum committee, through to two levels at the faculty level, then through the dean and out to the Senate curriculum committee, and then finally to Senate. And if it happens to be a new program that ends up in an accreditation, a parchment of some kind, then that needs to go through academic planning and ends up going through Senate to MPHEC. And there's a whole peer assessment process that's done after that. And that all feeds back then into our academic calendar, so that there's all those many levels, and Senate interfaces with them all to coordinate the changes and the revisions as they go through the process. So that by the time it gets to the Senate Curriculum Committee, we're doing back and forth communications, you know, mm-hmm. on a daily basis between the deans or the associate deans in regards to the revisions that are being done. So it's
has the process become easier with a move in technology towards paperless? Like, for example, you mentioned a lot of back and forth when you first arrived. Did that mean more meetings, and now it means more emails, or is it still very much let's sit down together? And
it's at the various levels, they definitely sit down together. The documentation definitely is tried to be kept in the electronic format as much as possible. Sometimes with curriculum, that's a little difficult, though, because it requires a lot of due diligence, and people being so mobile in their jobs need to be able to take that kind of information with them, and not everybody is onto the Blackberries and iPads and that kind of thing. So that, although that is improving, that whole piece of the connectivity puzzle is falling into place. I'm noticing more and more now of our faculty are using them to keep track of meeting documentation, which is good to see. We just revamped the whole program review process to be able to handle documentation dissemination electronically, so that we weren't killing forests because there's huge amounts of paper that could and that were being consumed relative to that whole review and peer review process, so that now it's all done online, and our external reviewers are given access to those specific places on our site, and so there's no paper at this point, which is really good. So, and of course, what that does too is it has established more transparency to that process. It's also established a historical archive, so that departments aren't reinventing the wheel the next time their 7-year review comes around.
Okay.
You know, they can just pull up the documents off of the site, and they've got a place to start. So it's that's a big step forward.
Definitely. What would you say, I guess, would have been the most significant change that you noticed since your time here? Whether it's just on campus, like, of course, you would have to say maybe the building's going up. There's so many new facilities. But in terms of within your area, you know, whether it's Senate business or just dealing with the students, what's some of the things that you've noticed? Oh, this when I first arrived, this wasn't an issue. Now it is, or when I first arrived, this was an issue. Now nobody asks me about it anymore.
Well, meeting the demands of government in the way of reporting and review is a huge change since I got here. It's also a huge commitment of resources, both financially and from the perspective of staff. We've hired on an individual now just to be involved in the review process to try and address some of those increasing demands, because they really have increased exponentially since I arrived here. And we can only see them getting more demanding as we go along, and so we're trying to address that as quickly. That is, I think, the biggest, the review process and having to address learning outcomes throughout the institution and all faculties as well. It's a fine line, I guess, you walk there in relation to learning outcomes, because you really want to allow the freedoms for the faculty to pursue their line of delivery, their line of research. And at the other side of it, there's the push by the government and the industry sector to have those more closer aligned with outcomes that apply to careers and employment, and so it's something that takes a lot of thought and a lot of review to be able to respond appropriately and not impact negatively on the pedagogical freedoms that exist within the university or the research. We're doing more. That's another change. We're doing more and more applied research here all the time. The St. Mary's has got a really, really great research community.
Great research community.
That's the course evaluation process.
Okay. I see. Okay. Well, this is fantastic. I guess I would just say that, you know, is there anything you'd like to add? One of the things that the project may be for is if students want to do thesis work, but also if someone wants to maybe write a history of St. Mary's. Is there anything you wanted to add with regards to your takeaway message, perhaps, about the university, how you see it, how you see it today and maybe going forward into the future?
Well, considering that the first part of my career was in the private sector, and just being in the sector that I was in the ocean industry sector, you really have to be at the leading edge of the market to maintain your market. And so that you're always looking out there, you're always assessing what your market is doing, you're always looking for the next opportunity, the next product, the next opening for an expansion.
Mm.
And post-secondary institutions, of course, are very much struggling in that sector now because, of course, with the reductions in government funding and everything that's going on, they're having to reassess all of their processes and their programs, and so my perspective, this is a time of significant change, but also a significant challenge for not only the university administrators, but everybody within the university community, and not just at St. Mary's, but other places as well. It is hard to stay ahead of a curve, quite frankly, as a small university with limited resources. And with the MOOCs, the MOOCs out there that are now free, and education's changing. So in the next little while, it'd be interesting to see how that evolves. I would like to see St. Mary's personally moving a little quicker to meet that change. Traditionally, no post-secondary situation or institution is quick to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a conservative and well-considered process to change. I would, as a private sector person, I tend to want that to move a little quicker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think St. Mary's has been doing all the right things. They're definitely fiscally one of the more responsible institutions. They are financially in not too bad a condition, considering the board has been wonderful at making sure that the budgets are kept in line, and that everything is covered. They don't allow deficits to build up, and we've had some amazing boards over the years in that regard, and that's done marvelous service to St. Mary's. It's put us in solid footing at this difficult time when we're having reduced budgets and having to look around to see, you know, what we can do to marginalize that impact and still provide the excellence and the quality of service that we want to provide here. So
it sounds like a lot of the success for the university comes from people with passion.
Absolutely.
Since we're in a small province with, like you say, limited resources, we're relying a lot on individuals.
So. We are definitely. There are people here that work incredible hours and very hard to make things work. And they all know who they are, and almost all of the rest of us know who they are too. And yet they're dedicated and solid, good people, and it's an amazing environment to work in. We've got some amazing minds here at St. Mary's, some leading edge researchers, and it's an exciting environment. It's an exciting time. It's my type. I would love to be a student again at this time, because there's so many more opportunities than there was when I was originally beginning my education at the post-secondary level.
But as you say, of course, you know, the lifelong learning never stops. You know,
it never does.
And hopefully, and as a student here too, I hope that I continue to grow with the university. And
absolutely,
you know, I'd like to stay around to see it.
Absolutely, never stop learning. Never stop learning. Where there's a will, there's always a way. And it could be just one small piece of information that you don't have that can make all the difference in the world. My advice to everybody would be, keep looking for that piece of information.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
I appreciate it.